Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montana.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Todd said, I am your host, Joe Montalvo. I hope everyone's having a great morning, great evening, great afternoon, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. Sorry for the late start. I was messing around with stuff, got in a little late. Realized the other day that I was rebuilding one of the phone boxes and didn't get a cord, so we're on wireless Bluetooth tonight. So everyone, keep your fingers really crossed. Well, Daryl's not. Daryl Sims is actually on the Skype connection, too, so he should have actually excellent sound for everybody tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, before I introduce Daryl formally, a couple of quick things. I know there's been a lot of stuff going on. And as far as I can see, I haven't seen anything with the UFOs over Japan, but we're going to get into that a little later in the show and a couple of other things. There's a lot of rumors floating around about. And I'm always curious to see what's going on. I was just talking with some people at MUFON the other day about this very thing. So those are a couple of things I want to cross over later on this evening in the show. But for most of my listening audience, Daryl Sims, y'all should be very familiar with it. For the people who don't know him, we affectionately call him the Alien Hunter. And we'll actually get into that a little bit later in the show as well, and he can explain to you why. Daryl's been doing this for a really long while. He's one of the abduction researchers. Well, let's backtrack a little bit. He's actually an abduction / contactee himself, okay? But he turned this into something else. He turned it into research, but he turned it into more than that, which we're going to touch on a little bit too. So, Daryl, welcome to the show, man. How you been?
I've just been fine, Joe. Just busy as a one-armed paper hanger in a tornado.
Well, I was just telling Linda the other day, you know, because we're starting this new new series of contactees we're running, 15 contactees over the next 14, 15 weeks, and then we're going to do two panel shows with all the contactees at the end. And so you're actually starting out as the first guest. And but I was telling Linux I hadn't talked to you in a while. You know, I catch up with you like I do with everybody on Facebook or on the internet or on one of the websites or something. But yeah, I hadn't talked to you, and I've been wondering what you've been up to and what had been going on and what kind of mischief have you been causing in the field.
Well, most of the mischief we've been causing is we got to two things really that are kind of outstanding, I guess, among everything else. One is we've got some biological DNA work that we're looking at right now, getting done by one of the top forensic experts in the country. And the second one, that was on some alleged alien DNA. And the second thing is this weekend I've got some tech people coming in from California, and we're going to... this is kind of fascinating. We can talk about it later if you want. But it's a scientist that has two implants, one in his ear and one in his foot, and they're, in his opinion, transmitting a signal. And we've got a whole team coming up to work on that Saturday.
Wait. Well, I was thinking, you know, when you said that, because that itself is interesting. Somebody just recently out of Australia was telling me they had something in their right shoulder that was definitely emitting a signal, because a couple of scanners they passed by picked it up. And then a New Orleans policeman that we're talking about, who had a reptilian contact down here, but recently, every time he goes through anywhere, he sets off the scanners. And when he's in line, like at the grocery store, if he gets too close to the barcode thing, it pops up on the screen. It's usually some type of error. I think he tells me it's like 404. He actually knows what the error is. I forgot what he said it was. It's kind of weird. But it actually sets off the thing. I mean, is it something like that? Or?
Well, no, this is something he actually measured with some scientific equipment. And what we'll be doing this weekend is putting him in a Faraday cage. That, in effect, is for your audience that are not familiar with that. Basically, that's a system set up where a signal cannot get in nor out. In other words, we're going to know exactly where that signal originates or not.
Where that source is coming from, here, where certain. Well, because, I mean, that's stuff we look into ourselves. You have to. Before I go on, I'm going to kind of flip on you here right quick, because I just seen one of our state directors pop up something, Lily out of New York. She wanted to know, she wanted to ask you, how is the best way to take skin scrapings of fluorescence and package them to send to a lab?
Very good. Good question. The correct answer that I'm going to give her, and then I'm going to give her a real-world answer, the correct answer is to get somebody medically trained to do it for you. The other answer is, if you can't find anyone and you have to do it by yourself or someone that you trust and that's skilled, you should do it with a sterile blade if you possibly can. Scrape the skin very, very carefully while you've got a black light setting up so you can see you're exactly getting the fluorescent area. And then scrape the area enough that it, with a white piece of paper, like a notebook paper as an example, underneath your arm or hand or wherever this is at. And once you can see the fluorescence is actually landing on the paper itself, you know you have at least some decent sample. Get as much as you can, transfer that, fold the paper, transfer it to a little plastic baggie, and don't touch any of it that you don't have to, I mean, other than the fact it's been on you. And that's the best way to get your sample intact. It's a whole process to have the stuff analyzed. Believe me, it's a mess. But anyway, that's the easiest way to get it done.
I hope you caught on it, Lily. She said to remind you something about pink fluorescence. I guess she must have written to you about that. She just told me to remind you.
Okay, very good. If she wants to send a sample, we've got about 15 samples from different parts of the body and different types of fluorescence. So this is going to give us an excellent sampling when we send these in. If she wants to forward her sample, she needs to email me right away, and I'll set it up with her, and we can include hers in on the sample studies that we're going to have done when we start that phase of DNA work.
All right, well, Larry, I hope you heard all of that. You know, because obviously, and that's another reason I've been really wanting to talk to you, because we've been doing so much new work in the last 2 years. The organization itself has been just dumping a ton of stuff. Because, you know, with all the new DNA research that's logging in and all, see, we've been working blood types, personalities, psychic empathic abilities, and then we've got, on top of all of that, there's some other programs besides that, but then on top of all of that, we've got out right now the gray, the human, and the reptilian questionnaires. And I got to say, the response has been a little overwhelming, thanks to some of the newer social medias and other areas that we're involved with these days. It's been overwhelming. And you know as well as I do, it takes a little while to establish if a person's really a contactee or not anyway. So it is a bit much. But I got to say, the data, I can't wait to share some of this stuff with you. Some of it's already up on the website, but it's all preliminary. The rest of the stuff will be out in April. And really, you know, it really shows a – let me ask you this. I shouldn't ask you to air, but I'm going to anyway. And if you don't want to tell me, you don't have to. But you know what blood type you are?
I am O negative.
I would have bet effing money on that.
O negative and American Irish.
37% of right now, and this is just a base study, this is out of 2,500 contactees. We're getting ready to increase it, and we're leaving all the data public so people can go find it on different venues. As it stands right now, overall, 60-something percent of all contactees are negative, or Rh negative. Out of that, though, almost 40% are O negative. So O negative only makes up 7% of the world's blood, but roughly makes up 37% or 40% of the contactees base. That's a significant find in itself.
It is, of course.
It is. So, but you know, but we got the other stuff listed along with it, and recently. Because of some stuff my Oregon State Director has been doing with personality stuff, and then the eye charts, we've been able to kind of correlate some information that helps us pre-contact these. I mean, in other words, let's say I met you on the street and you heard that I did abduction research and I was talking to you, and I started asking you particular questions. Well, if you started answering yes to like five or six of these, I'd have almost no doubt that you were a contactee. It's going to make you and I work a lot easier, man. It really is. It's going to make our work easier. We'll say that, because what we do is kind of tough anyway. It's easier now. So I wanted to go back to this signal thing for a minute, because I was thinking about something else. What do y'all think y'all going to actually find, like a transmitter or something that's – let me ask you this first. Do you think you're going to actually be able to get to it? Let's go there first.
Well, the important thing that we've, of course, to date done 22 surgeries, my last one being up in Flint, Michigan, about 6 months ago. And we removed an implant out of a lady's knee. In fact, the doctor up there the MD was so impressed, and he's not in ufology, he was so impressed with what he saw, he decided he wasn't going to give it to us. At that point, my lawyer steps forward and says, I think you will. And he said, this is your signature, this is their signature, and this is our signature, and here's the deal. And, of course, the guy handed it over, the film and everything at that point. But he decided he wanted to keep that for himself, whatever it was. But the thing that we're studying now, after all these surgeries, now we've got enough information from that end of the medical end. What we're interested in right now is studying these objects in situ. That means in the body, while they're still functioning, if there is a function that's discernible. And in this case, the scientist actually contacted me. I've known him for years, and he is an abductee, and he is as straight-laced as anybody you'll ever want to meet, and would not sit around and discuss this stuff with just anybody. And he said that... he called me the other day and said, Gerald, you're not, you better be sitting down. He said, I've just got two signals, one from an implant for my ear and one for my foot. And he said, there actually is a signature. And, of course, this was pretty exciting to me, because what I want to know is, does this stuff activate from within, from other methods, or does in fact, or is it that downloaded data, or is in fact there an ongoing signal? And if there is an ongoing signal, obviously the two questions that have come up immediately, is it a human origin, or is it in fact an alien origin? And that's the nature of the beast, what we will be looking at this weekend.
Well, keep me informed. You know, I'm always wanting to
hear
any data these days. Well, you know, there's only a handful of, you know, that even mess with this kind of stuff. We were talking about this the other day, how many people in the field are working in what areas. Okay, there's a lot of independent so-called abduction researchers, ladies and gentlemen. I use the word so-called because I want to be polite. The thing about it is it's way more involved in this than just walking up to somebody and asking them to tell you their story. It just goes well beyond that. And you're doing a person a disservice if you really don't understand what they've gone through, what they're dealing with, and what they may yet still have to go through. You know, Daryl knows. I mean, we're researchers, scientists, and therapists all in the same breath. Because unfortunately, when you're talking to people, you've got to treat it a certain way. You've got to treat them a certain way. And now, let me ask you this, too, Daryl. I know a friend of mine wrote to me the other day and was telling me that the amount of cases he's been getting in, his caseload has gone up. But he also said that his hoax load has gone up. Is that true for you or not?
Once again?
Well, he said his caseload has gone up. The amount of cases coming in has gone up. But he also said that he seems to be getting more hoaxes than he used to. It's not like he's getting a hot nine, you. But
no question about that. People are interested in. And this is when you fill out our forms. One of the things that I do while you're filling it out, if you're in front of me, is I teach how to determine whether people are lying or telling the truth just by monitoring them, and I do this on the college level for psych students, and also for police officers, organizations, and so on. My point being that when you fill out that paperwork, number one, I'm looking at your answers, looking at your handwriting, and if you have a propensity to lie or fabricate or prevaricate or you stretch the truth or so on, I want to know that. And it doesn't always mean that a person necessarily is lying, but I want to know if they can be induced to. And some people, of course, are very interested in debunking somebody like you or me or Bud Hopkins or anybody that they consider to be credible. They want to see if they can get past you. But the problem with that is that's irrelevant. The issue is if any of these cases are real, who cares whether anybody can get past anybody or not? They missed the whole point. If the phenomenon is real, it doesn't matter.
And it doesn't. And see, that's actually a damn good point, because it doesn't really matter if the phenomenon is real. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, people always want to use that believe word. And I do understand why they use it. It's just, for me, it's a lot different. Being an experiencer myself, I can't use the believe word because I already know that it's real because I've experienced it personally. So, you know, I have a hard time with that word. I tell people all the time, we're not talking about God. We're talking about ET. And the problem being is I don't want it to turn into some kind of weird cultish-like religion where we go off and drink Kool-Aid and wait for the mothership.
Right.
You know, I want it to stay a legitimate form of research. So, yeah, I'm kind of hard on the ones that tell me, because, you know, for me it's either you've seen enough evidence to know this is real, or you've had a personal experience that you know this is real, or someone you know personally has had an experience and has convinced you this is real. But there's no believing in there. If you believe, then you don't know that this is truly real. I mean, you're still working on the fact that it's real. Because I got to say, for me, it ain't about belief. It's about what the blank, blank, and what the blank, blank, blank is blank going on here. Sorry, Doc.
Of course.
You ain't show. So how you been making on the agenda? I know it's not a good topic to talk about often, but any good luck? Or
what was your last question?
I was going to say, hold on. Let me move this Bluetooth in a better position so you can hear me better. No, I was wondering about alien agendas. First off, how many do you think there actually are? And I know I'm not going to hold you to a number because it's impossible, but when we talk about alien agendas, 1, 2, 3, 5, maybe 100, it gets kind of blurred up in there somewhere.
Well, there's a lot of programs going on, and that's why it's there's a, basically, as you know, people that have these experiences are generally categorized into two groups, abductees and contactees, abductees being those who didn't particularly like the idea and feel like they were tampered with inappropriately and so on. That's kidnapping, basically. And the other is contactees who feel like the experience is either okay or good, or may have been very positive. But the fact is, as far as they're concerned, somebody out there had a right to do it, and they did, which that's okay too. But in those two programs, there are, as you know, a whole plethora of programs that are running, and the things in, as an investigator is to find out what particular program is running on this individual and by whom. And, of course, ultimately everybody wants to know the big question is why, and the why is a real difficult one to answer, but the programs themselves are much easier to basically answer, in my opinion. But the entities themselves have, of course, I have a, let me, for the audience, right, let me kind of clarify this so that they'll know where my headspace is at. And I'm not saying that I'm right and everybody else is wrong or anything like that. I'm saying this is my viewpoint based on my 40 years of investigations, and this is some of the conclusions I've come to. One of them is that what we're basically looking at with the alien entities is a group of, generally speaking, and I'm just generalizing here, generally 7 to 9 entities that are generally interactive with humans that we often refer to, or TV does, or Hollywood does, call aliens. They can be the greys, they can be reptilian-type creatures, they can be Bigfoot, they can be a human form of the entity, and so on and so on. And all of these particular ones that we're looking at, in my opinion, and as an abductee myself from 1952, my view is that what we're looking at there are actual constructs. They're transgenic bio constructs designed for interactive for humanity. And whether good or bad, that's up to anybody to decide for themselves. I'm not here to tell anybody what their experience is or isn't. That's not my business. But I think that these interactions and constructs that are given to us, called contact or abductions or whatever anyone wants to label it, that is part and parcel of the program. And in my opinion, these are entities that are, and in my opinion, made for this particular purpose. And as for the alien, it's what is a true alien from another world or whatever, I'm not really yet convinced that these guys are from another planet, so to speak. We've got pure NASA footage of craft that are, goodness sakes, one of them is well over 2,000 miles long. We've got some other footage we got from our own events that looks like, and our best guesstimate is between 50 miles thick and 600 miles across. My question, my statement is, who's coming from a planet with craft like that? I seriously doubt they're coming from a planet, from my point of view. They already have their shop, so to speak, on board, whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah, well,
in other words, all the eggs, all the sperm and everything, it's going to that location.
I agree that these, to help you with the audience, I know a lot of y'all are familiar with Planet X and Nibiru, but if you go back and read the new translation of Sumerian text, they talk about a type of ship about the size of our moon. Some of what Darrell's describing is about half the size of our moon, so these motherships, I have no doubt that these ships have been here. Where they're from, I couldn't say exactly, but they've been here forever. And I don't think anything's sourced off-world. I agree with you. I think everything is done here. Whether it's because they had to come here at one time and stay, or they're from some other dimension and they had to come here, or they're from some parallel, whatever. It doesn't really matter because they are here. How they got here would be interesting, but everything they're doing is here. It's not like you're sourcing off-planet to do these kind of things. And it's not that I don't think it might be off-world colonies and there might not be other places. It's just, it seems like when I'm talking to contactees, they talk about places, buildings or ships, whatever, they're big. Some of them are underground, some are underwater, some in the space. But still, they're right here in Earth's range.
And, oh, they're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, they're right here. I mean, it's not that like they're of any distance. Right? And I find it fascinating because there's been a lot of sightings of big ships. You don't see them for long, but they usually, you see them long enough, you have no doubt what you saw. I can tell you that much. The one we see in Florida, there's no doubt what we saw. I mean, the thing was just huge. You're watching this thing. And as soon as you see it, you know it's not something we could build. It is just too freaking big. There's just no way we're getting anything that large in the sky unless maybe it's a blimp. And besides, I don't think we could hide building something that big. Not current technological levels. But
no, I agree with you. I think you're so right about that. We had a case out of Wisconsin recently of a very large craft. And what made this one an interesting case, for as far as I'm concerned, my attorney was one of our investigators, and he investigated the case. What made the case so significant is this was seen by different people in different parts of the city, and this one particular group of people, this individual and four of his party guests decided to they want to watch this thing for a while. And the craft is gigantic. It's a triangular shaped, and they're like freaking out. They're like, "Well, that can't be ours." I mean, it's silent, it's huge, and it's just floating across the sky slowly here. We're pretty close. The bottom line is that finally the individual and his wife get in the car, and they decide, and she didn't want to do it, and he does, and they take off. And the long and the short of it is, they ended up with missing time, and his watch broke. Stopped at 11:29 in the evening. It was very cold out, and they couldn't get their car started. They called a wrecker, and they were amazed. He got there almost instantly, and the wrecker guy said, "What do you mean instantly?" He said, "It's been over 2 hours since you called me." And they said, "Well, that's not possible, because we would have froze to death out here." And he said, "Well, I don't know, buddy. I'm just here to haul the car." Well, the guy who made the report, and I got the watch, by the way. The watch, inside of the watch had been completely melted. Not the outside, just the interior. It was a fairly expensive watch. And the whole point of this thing is we got the affidavit on the individual, and guess who it was? The local DA.
Okay, that's interesting.
The district attorney filed the report. It was him.
Now
that's a good case.
Yeah, that's a good case because, I mean, you know, somebody asked me the other day, does this go in every walk of life? That's a good example. It goes everywhere. It does.
Well,
with the exception of the people who keep writing to me that Obama's a reptilian. Guys, reptilians are much smarter than that. I just want y'all to know that. I'm leaving that alone after that. We're moving on. No, really. Now I got to start. I should have never said that. Look, guys, at this point, I don't know who's in control. I don't think any president since, I don't know, God knows when, has actually been in control. I'm not sure who runs the things anymore. I'm just glad they leave me alone. That's all I can say. Lord have mercy. Well, it's really strange.
Just lower my taxes.
I know. That would be nice. I could use a tax break. I could use a really good one, too. If you're a reptilian, I do good research for you reptilians. I come here. Give me a break. we used to get things about Bush was one of those evil human guys that used to work with Hitler. You know, you do stuff like this all the time. I'm thinking, really? Where do y'all come up with these ideas?
Now,
what we've been working on a lot is this reptilian connection to the past, because with some of the new translations that came out in the Sumerian text and some of the stuff that's in the Egyptian and Dogons, the reptilians look like they may actually have been from here, at least a long time ago. They may have left 60 million years ago when the planet bit the big one, but it does look like they actually might have, I say reptilians, they're actually amphibians, but, or reptilian amphibians, I don't know how you'd categorize them. They're not cold-blooded. They look like a reptile, but I can't legitimately call them a reptile when I know they're not cold-blooded. It's a damn thing. So sooner or later, somebody will come up with a term that I can agree with or like.
Right about it. The fact that it took scientists forever to figure out that that the dinosaurs were not, in fact, reptiles either.
I know. You read
I mean,
that
it took forever to figure that out. I mean, duh.
And yeah, because it had something to do. I know they were. I remember watching this one show where they were showing the gate of one of the dinosaurs, and the doctor they had there is like, no way, there ain't no cold blood animal running like that. I hate to tell you that, buddy.
It ain't gonna happen. It's just never gonna happen. Never.
Yeah, and that was a point. But what was the, okay? I'll come back to y'all in a minute. I see stuff flying by the auditorium, but I'll come back in a few minutes and scroll back down. But yeah, that's the point. But you know, we've been getting a lot of research, and then you know, there was a map of the creator that Pravda website keeps up, the Russian newspaper, because it was one of the archaeologists that found it. But it dates back roughly 120 million years. It's an aerial resource map. Now, as far as I know, humans weren't on the planet 120 million years ago. So who made it? And no one, and what gets me is no archaeologist so far has argued the validity of the map or its age. So they don't even want to talk about it because you can't argue with age.
No. You'll never discuss stuff like that.
No, they ain't going to discuss that because you can't argue or fight it. So they just go, oh, well, we don't want to talk about that. Yeah, it's an area resource map. This is such an interesting piece of history and a piece of the puzzle because here we have a map. It was actually a cover stone. It was found. They looked at it and they found that the map could only be made from, it was of a valley, and it could only have been made from an aerial view. Because it's looking down. The map is cut from a down-looking view from the air. So whoever made this map actually was above the valley when they laid it out in their head, and then they came and did the map. So it's a very significant piece of evidence to suggest that if man wasn't here, someone else was. Because, you know, science says we're only, what, 2 million years old now, 3 million years old, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's true, who did this, you know? And there's been other evidence that there's been in some other stuff that's been dated back in the 50, 60, 70 million year range that could only have been made by an intelligent form of life. So something not adding up to you guys. I mean, somebody else was either we're older than we look, or somebody else was here, or is still here, I should say, I guess. So, but then when did that open up a can of worms? So we got the reptilians that may be from here. So Dell, do they have a legitimate claim on a planet if they abandoned it?
Well, I guess it's kind of like real estate, I guess. Whoever holds title's got it. You know, talking about real estate, I was invited several years ago to an invitation-only meeting with some of my medical guys to the Cassini Project, and they know who I am. I had no idea why in the world they would invite me to a Pasadena, California JPL meeting on Cassini was a first nuclear-powered spacecraft we were going to send to the area of Saturn. Well, with that, as I asked them when they asked for question and answers at the questions for the end of the meeting, and they were, of course, expecting technical questions, and, of course, there I was in the meeting. So I said, you know, we studied the moon for 10 years, and then we finally got there. And then we were studying Mars for longer than that, and should be ready in 3 years to go. I said, why in the world would you drop Mars, which is a heck of a lot closer, and all of a sudden develop a nuclear package that you're going to send, this nuclear craft you're going to send to Saturn? My question to you, sir, is what did you find on Saturn that made you junk your research at this point on Mars? They ended the meeting and never said another word.
Well,
I mean, why would they do that? It makes no sense unless you found something.
Well, because they did find something. I remember one of the significant findings that freaked everybody out was the upper atmosphere of Venus was identical to the upper atmosphere of Earth. And no one was expecting to find that, which means at one time, that atmosphere and that planet was like ours. And we don't know if there's toxic or if there's even. See, that's the whole problem with this. We look at Venus and say, oh, we couldn't live there because of what we think Venus is. That doesn't mean a race more advanced than us couldn't live there. You know, our technologies in 1,000 years, maybe even less than that, maybe 100 years, would be able to sustain those type of heats and pressures. I mean, we're getting better and better every year. So, you know, it's unfortunate that our scientists can only look at this with a limited Earth-like view. They don't seem to be able to think, you know, where are we going to be 100 years ago, because all you have to do is look back 100 years and see where we are and see where we are today. There's a big damn change. So you know 100 years from now is going to be more of a big change. So You know, I don't understand why they can't see that. Now, it's almost like, you know, it's like the sheeple thing, how the country's mostly sheeples. It's almost like the scientists are like that now. They're just like, they're in a fog. They can only see, they got blinders on is what it is. They can only see what's right in front of them. And if there's anything else that spills out on the left or right, oh, screw it. It don't fit in my norm. I'm moving on. That makes me crazy, by the way. It makes me crazy.
Well, if you're funded by the National Science Foundation and or you, your academia and your contacts are connected to that, you will toe the line and you will parrot the party line. It's just that simple.
Yeah,
or you won't be in business.
Yeah. You know, I don't know who John Mack knew or what he had on somebody, but he's the only professor, tenured professor that I know that could get away with what he got away with. Nobody else. They would have been gone. They would have crucified him.
He paid the price too. I talked to him in Istanbul, and he asked me a lot of different questions. We sat there for quite a while and discussed that on a cruise we had, and also on a private meeting. But the thing that that he and I honored him for what he had done. I said, you know, I know you've taken a huge amount of heat for that, and I talked to. To one of his, in fact, I met one of his PhDs came out to our implant research, and she stayed there for 2 days, and finally there were the Japanese and us and a couple of doctors, and we're in the after the surgeries and all over and everything, we're in a hotel room, and she sits there for a while and says, "This is a bunch of crap," and I said, "Oh, okay." And everybody stunned, like, what in the world is her problem? And she, you know, packed up her little stuff, her little knapsack, and said bye, and walked out of the room. And and then finally, and they looked at me, and they started talking, and I said, no, be quiet. And about 30 seconds later, we hear this on the door. And it's her again. I opened the door, and I said, yes. And she's got her knapsack in her, almost back in the ground, tears in her eyes, and she says, we've got to stop this. We've got to stop it. We're getting it again. And I said, sweetie, I know that. I said, why do you think you're moving all the way to California from Massachusetts? What do you mean? I said, why do you think you're moving from your team away from that team to be alone? I said, that's one of the big issues with abductees. They either feel they're all alone, I said, which is a program, another program that's run by the alien to make you think your parents are not your parents or you're not related and blah, 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 and all these different things, the feelings of all alone. But the real purpose is isolation. And I said, that is the point. And she said, but they're going to get me again. And I said, that is highly likely. And, of course, everybody in the room was just like stunned. You know, here she was a minute ago saying this is all crap, and now she's sitting there crying, admitting she's an abductee, and she said, please don't ever tell Dr. Mack. And I said, as long as he lives, I will never let anybody know that you were an abductee on his team. and she was keeping this quiet all the time. She said, I said, it would be far easier if you were a contactee on his team, but an abductee, that doesn't work quite as well. But anyway, yeah. That was so. I never told the story until his passing, of course. But I never gave her name, and nor would I. But that just again goes to show this almost dual personality that we have with the abductee. You know, they're living their private, their regular life that they you see anywhere, and then of course there's the secret life that they live. And lo and behold, there she is, just confessing it all in front of everybody, and just in tears.
You know, and it's well, because it does it. Because, I mean, contactees will run. You know, it's weird because I can't tell you how many contactees tell me. I get the urge. I get right in the middle of life and I got to go. 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 And if you can hold them still long enough, they'll get past it. But it's interesting to watch because they really flip out on it. It's like, I got to go. I got to go. Tell me, you know, life will be going good. Stuff will be right. Sometimes it won't. Sometimes it will. But right in the middle, out of the blue, I got to go. And I've seen them, like you just said, they'll move completely across the country. I've actually seen them move to other countries. And, you know,
sure.
I know what they're running from.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I know what they're running from.
So right.
They don't know what they're running from. Yeah, they don't know what they're running from. And I'm telling this over and over, it's not going to help, guys. You can run all you want. You're not gonna, you can't outrun it. I'm sorry. You got to face it and you got to deal with it. That's all you can do. You know, you just got to do it that way. And it's hard. It's hard to make contactees understand that. And abductees, I got to be honest with you, when it comes to abductees, I'm usually like, are you sure you're ready for this? Do you really want to know this? Why don't you take a year or so and think about this really before you come, you know, really open these memories up? Because, you know, there's so many of the LL and L's and PL and L's, that are, you know, love, light, and laughter, and the peace, love, and lighters out there with all these wonderful, great contacts, which I'm not faulting y'all, so don't write to me, guys, okay? It's just I don't see that like y'all do. I'm sorry. I get a good contact. Every one good contact like y'all are talking about, I get a bunch of other contacts. I'm not going to get into it. But I know Dan knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, and I know you know what I'm talking about. And you know why I'm bringing this up, because you know I know Dan knows this. I also know Mary Rodwell knows this because we talked about it. I know Yvonne Smith knows this. I also know Bud and David know this. So all the researchers who have done multiple cases understand this. I just don't understand why it's so hard for the contactees to understand it.
Well, it goes back to the programming, Joe. The programming will determine a lot about it. I've written two books, one on Evidence and Light, and that lady that called on the fluorescence, it'd be good for her to have an address for it. It's simply go to OperationAlienDNA.com or AlienHunter.org, and you click on there and you can read me. But people who are abductees and contactees are running different programs and on a psychological level are going through a heck of a lot. And some of the, of course, a lot of your PL and L, so to speak, types are, their program is that, you know, this, I know what happened to me, blah, 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 and maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I've got cases, I literally worked with a lady in Slovakia, a scientist's wife, and she said, I want you to work with me here. I know you're only going to be in town for, you know, another day, and is there any way I can get you to work with me to try to find out what this is? And I said, so tell me just a tiny bit about your experience. She said, well, I think my experiences were very positive, and so an uplifting. And I said, well, I'm delighted to hear that. I don't mind word, but hey, people do have those, and that's okay. Long story short is her husband said, oh, my gosh, I want to be there. And she said, no. No one will be there except the translator, and if Daryl doesn't meet him, he's not going to be there. Well, the long and the short of her story was, and I never said a thing to her, I just let her discover it all by herself, that she, in fact, had been hoodwinked. And that's what the story was, but she sensed something wrong with this picture. Pretty sharp lady. And after a while, in her event, she's shaking, looking at this image on the wall in the craft, and finally just looks around and realizes we're all being led to believe that, you know, we're in the school of higher consciousness or whatever on this craft, and every one of us stand there shaking, being programmed. And she looks over at the entities. There's a number of them in the room, in a very large room, and there were several hundred people. It wasn't just her. And she said, every one of us were, I mean, the same thing, just shaking. And they said, there was no school of higher consciousness. There was nothing going on in that room like what I believed when I left. I said, it's okay. It's just a program that's run, and it's okay to know that. I mean, it kind of irritates you if you find out later that, you know, the show that you were on, that wasn't the show. But it happens, you know. I mean, it just does.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's but see, that's another thing, just making contactees and people understand what goes on and what doesn't go on. And I just don't know why people get so offended now when we talk about, you know, bad ETs or ETs being mischievous or doing things that they shouldn't be, because it's not like we're lying. It's not like we're making it up. And I just see everybody off on this program. It's just, yeah. But yeah, and then, of course, I don't know what they're spraying on mainstream, because they're all in a daze somewhere. But you see, mainstream, you know, something I realized just recently, thanks to some friends of mine. Mainstream ain't what mainstream used to be. If you right now, anybody who's listening to us, and I know how many listeners we have, If you go in right now and type in UFO radio or paranormal radio on any search engine anywhere, you will see that this station is either first, second, third. Most of the time, it is like first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. A lot of times it's second, third, fourth, and fifth. But that tells you something, that a little nit station like mine can beat out Coast to Coast and other big networks, guys. It should give you an understanding that, yes, mainstream media is holding out, but you know what? The American people and the world people are looking for their sources of media in other places now. I didn't realize it until just recently, but they are. They don't really care what CNN and Fox says anymore. They're looking for it somewhere else. So everybody who's getting involved just has to be prepared for what's going on. You have to really know what you're saying. And it's one of the reasons I'm so funny about who I consider to have good evidence and who I don't, is because I know we reach a lot of people. And I don't want to be causing more harm than good, to be honest with you. So,
sure.
It's one of the reasons. And I will occasionally, I'm not going to lie to you, I will occasionally bring on a nutcase and let the audience have some fun. But that's very, very rare and very, very rare. Now that we've got another show on the network that likes to do that, I'll leave it alone. But you know what I mean? It's an overwhelming thing here now, and we've all been trying to convince mainstream for decades, but I don't think we need to anymore. I think if you're honest and you do good research and you've got an idea of what a web presence is, I think you can convert a lot of people, help a lot of people understand and get a lot more people involved without having to involve. Because you know something else while I'm on this rant, I noticed something. Stephen Bissett's been on CNN a few times, so have other ufologists. I have not seen anywhere where it has done any good for the field. And they were legitimate shows. I mean, they weren't picking or making fun or stuff like that. But it really hasn't helped. But I can see where open media on the Internet has made a big difference. I've also seen where it's made a big problem, too. But it also has made a big help, too. But anyway, that's enough of that rant. We're going to move on now. I got off on a rant.
That was your score on your discussion concerning the CNN, number one. There was two things I'd like to bring up. Number one is CNN.
Yes.
CNN came to my home for 2 days, and they promised me, and they did not send a segment producer out. They sent one of their top bosses, and they promised that they would show whatever evidence that we actually had that was, that was deemed credible. And they said, we want you also to hypnotize a couple of the abductees. And I said, to what end? And they said, well, we just want to see it done and so on. And the bottom line is that when that was over, 2 days later, they were stunned, number one, there was evidence. Number two, that the abductees, they asked me, the one guy who didn't have a clue, he was their assistant, he said, well, how do we know that you weren't leading that person in the hypnosis session? And I said, well, number one, I said to kind of clear this up a little bit and level the playing field. I said, I brought a report on my abductees. Did you bring yours? I said, they got a clean bill of health. How do I know who you are? How do I know you're not insane? Did you bring your psych report? I said, these people are bearing their souls and laying their lives out here. And number two, I said, the young man, in the event here, I said, when he was a child, I said, well, he claimed he was abducted with another kid several times, and they were dropped off in different parts of Houston in the wrong location. I said, whether my hypnosis was correct, accurate, or anything is almost irrelevant. He says, why is that? And I said, I'm sitting here with a police report. It happened, buddy. The only description they ever got of their actual kidnappers was a bug-eyed little guy that took them, and that's the only thing they ever got, and they were dropped off multiple times, different times of their life as young boys, by these entities. The police report reads that. How many cops you think are going to put that in the report as incorrect? It's irrelevant what you think. It's what the fact is that the data stands there totally. And anyway, the second thing I want to tell you that underscores what you said on the media is I was on a speaking tour in England from the west side of England to London, and
I had a day off or so, a day and a half off, and a TV program called me out of Rome and said, if we flew you over, would you come over for this program tonight? And I said, sure. And got over there, did the show, and I asked the guy, I said, look, it's the second biggest TV program in Rome. And I said, so why are you bringing me over here? And I said, you run out of soap? And he said, pretty much, he said, it's football or soccer season, and nobody watches TV, you know, and that's soccer. And I said, if you guys, this way I show you, you'll get people on here, a lot of them. He says, no, you don't understand. I said, I heard every word you said. They did what I told them. They advertised it properly, and we got a 34 share that night during soccer. The guy almost fell over. He said, how can we do that? And I said, if you would simply present this stuff in the light and the context of which it really is and not make it up or hype it, you'll do that. Well, Stan, later, after football season was over, they invited Travis Walton up, and he got a 27 share. And it wasn't football season. But the point is, they realized that this stuff really, people want to know. But they want to know it from a credible point of view, not some stupid Hollywood version.
I know that's the truth. They do. I mean, people stop me and ask me all the time. I just don't understand why they can't. I mean, this stuff doesn't need to be hyped. Let's be honest. We're talking about alien abduction, alien contact. What the hell? There's nothing to hype here. Some of the contacts that I have personally had or listened to or reviewed is better than any movie I've ever watched anywhere. I got to be honest with y'all, and some of it scares the living you know what out of me. But still, there's no need to hype it. There's not. I mean, I can understand doing dramatizations and things like that, but let's keep them to the facts. You know, because, you know, some people aren't photogenic and some people shouldn't be on television. I do understand that. But, you know, doing dramatization is fine. Keep it to the source, and I think it'll be good. And I think if you present it, I know every time we've presented or had a chance to get in the mainstream press and presented it the way we wanted to, it has always been an excellent response. Because it was funny, when Times-Picayune came to do the article on us, they were going to give us one little, you know, quarter-head cage somewhere back in Neverland. And I was talking with a little cub reporter doing an interview, and I said, you know, if you gave us a good place, you would really see a lot of, you'd get a lot of attention out of it. So she knew she couldn't give us first page, so what she did is she gave us a full page in the living section, the very front page of the living section. And it did. It sold newspapers. People wanted to see that alien skull on that paper. They wanted to see it. They were interested in it. You know, and they wanted to know. And it was she did a good job. She didn't pass it up to article. Matter of fact, when I met you up in Houston, it was a couple years back when that little little cub reporter for the Houston paper was running around. She did a really nice article on us. She really did. I was surprised because she was kind of nervous. And I was kind of worried that she might end up writing, but she did. She did a pretty good job on us. I was up there with Jim Sparks. Huh? That's who was up there. I forgot about that. But that was kind of strange. But you know what? We got to take a break. This is a perfect time to go. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want everyone to stay tuned to UFO Undercover on the Paranormal Radio Network. I am your host, Joe Montano. I'm sitting and speaking with Mr. Dal Sims, and we'll be back in about 8 minutes, so please stay tuned.
You don't know how you met me, you don't know why you can't turn around and say goodbye. All you know is when I'm with you, I make you free and swim through your veins like a fish in the sea. I'm singing, follow me, everything is alright. I'll be the one to tuck you in at night, and if you want to leave, I can guarantee you won't find nobody else like me. I'm not worried about the ring you wear, 'cause as long as no one knows, then nobody can care. You're feeling guilty, and I'm well aware, but you don't look ashamed, and baby, I'm not scared. I'm singing, follow me, everything is alright. I'll be the one to tuck you in at night, and if you want to leave, I can guarantee you won't find nobody else like me.
Undercover with your host, Joe Montalvo.
Display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montalvo.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Natasha says, I am your host, Joe Montalvo. I want to welcome everybody back from the Curse and Rick. I hope y'all got y'all little snacks and foods and Cokes and drinks and popcorns or whatever you may have. Ian, you stay away from the alcohol. It's a little early in the afternoon, that, my friend. Oh, wait, that's the guy. It's wee hours in the morning over there in the UK. Have at it, man. Never mind. I apologize for that. I want everyone to welcome Dal Sims back this evening. You know, Dal, I've been enjoying it first. It's always great to have you on because, you know, we do a lot of parallel research and then a lot of stuff we're not doing. You're doing a lot of stuff we're doing. Y'all not doing stuff. It works out really, really, really well for everybody else out in the field and all the different contactees looking around. Now, a quick question, and I don't want to get into this too much because it's been getting drug around. It's been getting way too much press. Anyway, I know you've been keeping up on the Bud and Cal Laney thing, and I know you've met both of them, and I was just surprised when all this came out. It was kind of like out of the left field kind of thing. I got to be honest, and I said this before, and the only reason I was asking you because of another friend of ours who's a contactee. I'm not going to say her name when I ask her. She'll probably smack me. I'll give you her initials, KW. She asked me, I guess either you had said something or heard something. She'd asked me about what your thoughts on this whole thing was. And I said, well, when I had him on the show, I'll ask you, because I really don't know. And, you know, because I had not a clue. Because, you know, like I said, as far as I can see, I haven't heard any of those contactees come out and say anything bad about him, so... I think that speaks enough.
that speaks volumes. And you know, there's no way that you could work with people. The only real complaint I had was from a lady, and somebody told me this the other day. He said her complaint is that you wouldn't hypnotize her. And I said, well, the case is not over. We're still looking at. I said that the hypnosis is usually the last thing that we do, if we even do that. And I said that my point is that we often can get evidence and other things from by other methods of memory recovery. And I said the first bullet that's going to be fired at her in her case, if it ever goes public, is you were hypnotized and they told you to say all that stuff. They stuck it in your head. And obviously none of that's true. But the point is that it's just less bullets for people to fire at you with. If you ever want your case to go public or you want it looked at by some credible people people you consider to be credible in academia as an example. So it's just kind of a little saving grace thing there if people want to ever think about going public because you are definitely going to get shot at.
Well, we're the same way. We will use hypnosis, but not often. And more, if you're going to be honest, I have found over the years by working with contactees on a personal basis and having them work with other contactees, the information usually flows quite a bit more readily available than most people are willing. It's just a matter of getting them through the dark places so they can get to the other places. And I don't think it's quite as hard as everybody makes it out to be. It's not that it's easy, but sometimes hypnosis has to be used. I mean, sometimes people just have a block that you can't seem to get around, but...
Sure.
It's a rare thing for us to use it, but hey, you know, it is a tool that can be utilized as long as it's done correctly.
It's a tool, that's all, yeah.
And unfortunately, there are people out there that think that that is the only thing that there is, and that's the only way you can recover memory at all. And the fact is, if you talk to people correctly and use good, even just using hypnotic linguistic questioning techniques, you can pull a lot of stuff out of people anyway on a conscious level. And again, it's up to the individual, whatever they, you know, ultimately want to do. I mean, it's their life. They can do it or not, you know. It's whatever they want, whatever floats your boat.
You know, we got all kind of question stacking. I get some of these out. Before I get in trouble with the audience. I mean, we had quite a few of them that have been stacking up, and I've been kind of talking about other stuff. Let's see. What is this one? For the implants he said were found in the body, how are these detected by CAT scan or MRIs or some other way? That was the first part of that question.
Well, first of all, we don't know that for an implant to be dangerous to an individual, such as in the event of using an MRI, if the metal is ferrous, those are huge, gigantic magnets in that MRI machine. And if you've got the ferrous metal or metal that can be that's magnetized or can be magnetized, and the people doing the examination with the MRI don't know that, that thing could pull clean out of you. In most cases with these people, the implants, based on in my book and my study, we found everything from ceramic, literally metallic ones, that were in fact magnetized. We found others that were not. I mean, it just it really depends on you know what it is you're looking for. You know what you know. We found everything. The biological stuff, some of the more the main thing I think they're asking and looking forward here is the one thing you want to do is if you find an implant in you and you know that it's there, well, obviously you want to determine what the nature of it is. Is it in ferrous or not? And if it is, you certainly don't want to go get an MRI. That would be like a huge mistake. But the fact is you can test and check things different ways. I've got film footage of a magnet basically attached to the guy's leg. And in that case, I had a brain surgeon present and a cardiovascular surgeon, and they said, "What do you think?" And I said, the guy is he's an auto mechanic. The guy's also got 7 scoop marks down his leg, one right after another. So no question the guy's an abductee in my thinking and my examination. And the brain surgeon says, "So what do you want to do? What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I think that he's an auto mechanic, and that's a shard of metal that's gotten into his shin because he gets down on his hands and knees a lot, and that it's not, in fact, an implant." I said, "But you can't hardly convince an abductee or contactee. They don't have an implant. They all think they got one, and the fact is they're extremely rare. You just don't hardly find them." Well, this thing turned out to be a very normal piece of metal. Well, we thought that was true. We found that out through our lab up in Scotland. But the bottom line is I told the cardiovascular surgeon and the brain surgeon my opinion that this is just a shard of metal, that it's not an implant. But we should, he said, "Then you want to remove it?" And I said, "Yes, I do, because we want to show people that even if we know that the object is not alien, we will take the time, if at all possible, we've got him here, the conditions are right, we're all ready to go with our surgery and everything, let's just go ahead and remove it." And he wants it removed anyway. He's going to be real disappointed if that's what it turns out to be, and it did. But the fact is, we're not afraid to look at anything. We're not predisposed that it has to be an alien implant, or we don't want to even talk to you. I mean, that's just not the way we are.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, that's just doing good research. That's the way it should be.
Sure.
That's just caring for people is what that actually is, which is something that doesn't seem to happen as often as it should these days. Let's see, then there's two parts of this. This actually is coming from Rydell, who is assistant state director on South Carolina. I just almost forgot that. I'm getting old here. It says, if Daryl thinks certain ETs are here to exploit humans, what are some of the specific reasons he thinks they are doing this? And just a big question mark after that.
Well, that's a good question, and certainly we have quite a bit of answers to that, and some of them are not going to be pleasant. But one of the most basic ones, I think, one of the softest answers I can give, the softball one, is if somebody comes into your house kidnaps your daughter and your son, and your son and your daughter keep telling you, Dad, Dad, Mom and Dad, somebody comes in at night, every so often, and they take me, and it's a burglar guy or whatever, and you're saying, oh, you know, well, you call the police, you do all the appropriate things. The police don't find any evidence of that at all. And then later, 10 years later, your kids keep complaining about this, and you find out that, in fact, a burglar had done that. And, in fact, the burglar had come in and actually taken your daughter's eggs and your son's sperm. Now, what do we consider that hostile, or do we consider it a good thing? Well, most people are, if that guy gets caught, they want him in jail for the rest of his life. However, if you'll just change the burglar to a quote-unquote alien with little bug eyes and make him short, all of a sudden it becomes cosmically correct, and what he did was correct. Well, the question is, what are they doing with millions of eggs, millions of samples of sperm? Where's all this going, and to what end? I mean, obviously, there's a transgenic program going on that's massive. The worst end of the spectrum, the bad end of it, is, and I, right here in Texas, we had a lady abducted, and she was abducted at the same time her kids were. Her kids were actually picked up earlier that morning, and nobody could find them, and then they finally showed up, and two little tiny guys. And she told, they kept telling her that we were taken up to the devil's house. Well, now the little kids don't have a clue where the alien craft is or anything like that. So they simply described something, an unpleasant experience, I suspect, in the terms that they had. And then later the lady gets abducted at noon, and her two children are sitting right there in front of, right at the screen door, in their little wading pool. And long story short is the two children ended up dying from their experience, and I have the autopsy reports and the police reports and everything else, and the lady could hear her children screaming in the other room while she was being abducted. What part of pleasant or unpleasant does one not understand about that experience? That's exploitation. The last case, I'll give you the worst one, is I got a brand new case just out of Brazil. Just got it a few days ago, of another human mutilation. And most people are familiar with one on the internet called the Water Spanga, human mutilation. And, that's also in my book, Alien Hunter, Evidence and Light. But the point is that in this particular evidence, this case is so bad that I'm not even going to put it out there. The lady was just literally skinned alive. I mean, it makes the Water Spanga case look like a joke. But that doesn't mean that all experiences that people are going through in the alien experience are bad or anything like that. But the question was slanted, it was shaped to me, that, you know, if we're being exported, how so? And I think how so is pretty obvious, that somebody's implanting you and not telling you about it. If the government did that, would it be okay? Well, of course it wouldn't. So how is it that somebody with bug eyes can get away with this, and it's not exploitation? To me, it is. That's just my view.
No, it is. It is. And it's always been an argument of mine in the field, which still actually hacks up several of our fellow researcher friends out there, and even some of the more famous ufologists, just because, hey, you know, they're taking us, guys. It's against the will. I don't care. And I always say this. I don't care if it's a good experience, a bad experience, or an indifferent experience. If they didn't call up and say, hey, John, I'm coming by at 8 o'clock to pick you up, kick you out and ship. We're going to do this, this, and this, and we're going to talk about this, and we're going to run you through this program and that program. Anything short of that is an abduction. And in the United States, if another country did that, that would be considered an act of war. If I took my neighbor and brought them the house and all kinds of experiments on and dropped them, oh, God, I'd go to prison. I'd be lucky if I didn't get the death penalty in Louisiana. So, guys, why people don't get more mad about this? And I understand that we're learning things, that ET's helping some things, and I understand that. But in the end, guys, in the very end of everything, they are taking us against the will, they're taking children, they're taking sperm, they're doing all sorts of stuff that they're not telling any of the contactees about. So you gotta wonder, you know, how much should we actually, let me rephrase this, how much trust should we actually put in to the ETs? I'm not telling you to hate them. I'm not telling you to love them. I'm just telling you to be really damn careful. How's that? I still get the EBGBs, and it's just one of them things. It's, You know, even though my contact in my 40s now, because I'm almost 50, is much different than it was when I was younger, and I do have a much better understanding of what's going on, still, they still don't come ask. Just the other day, I just talked about this on the air the other day. I was coming home. Me and Linda were coming back from Florida, and somehow or another, we blew our exit by 4 minutes, but only drove like 10 minutes. And then it just all of a sudden, we went from Slidell to Hammond in a matter of 30 minutes, which is about an hour and 20-minute drive. Crossed and did not see any exits or see any rain. But as soon as I realized we had passed exit and got off, it started down, torrential downpour, like you couldn't even see the headlights in a car. And then we realized what had happened. We had overshot our exit by 30, almost 40 miles, and managed not to see any other exits along the way. It's, you know, so I don't even know what happened in that case. I still don't, I haven't even tried to recover any memories from it yet. So I don't even know what went on, and I got to be honest with you, I'm quite a bit PO'd, because it just snatched me out of the blue. And for what reason, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, me and the wife, there had to be a reason. They could have told me. You know, I said, hey, Joe, we had to stop and jab you for this reason. Maybe I need to be reconditioned because I was a little straying towards the paranormal or something. No.
My suspicion is that if most people were told in advance and they made preparation for it, there would be a lot of people that would actually probably go along with the program.
I think probably more than 75% would go along with the program. From the reviews I've done with Kentucky's, I'd have to say they would. And it's not that some of these people haven't had bad experiences. They did, but they're getting something out of it. It's something I don't, we don't have enough time to get into this, but they're getting something, or they think they're getting something out of it.
Well, the whole thing I think bothers me about it, Joe, is not the untruthfulness of it. We got eight people abducted in one experience, and they came back with eight different screen memories. And there's no question the event is real. I mean, we got film of the entire craft and tons of more physical evidence in that case than we've had in all our cases combined. My point is that I used to be a police officer and I'm a licensed private investigator in the state of Texas. If I walk into a situation as a police officer and there's a dead body laying there with a knife stuck in its back and there's eight witnesses, and I ask each person standing there what happened, and I get eight different answers, guess how many people are going to jail?
Everybody going to jail.
One of them may be telling the truth, but seven of them definitely aren't. And again, in the UFO thing, it's not that we're saying they're all lying. I'm saying that there have been that something has been done to them that does not allow them to have the true information of their experience. And that, to me, that's pretty high deception as far as I'm concerned.
Now, you know, I've seen this question come up a minute ago. It says, what's the difference between humans hypnotizing humans and aliens hypnotizing humans? Well, first off, aliens don't really hypnotize us. Not in the way that we hypnotize anyway, but go ahead and answer that,
Daryl. I agree with you. The primary difference is what they're doing is not hypnosis. They're actually accessing your neurology. Because when they walk in there, a hypnotist doesn't have a clue what's inside your head. He's there to find out what's inside your head on a specific subject. The alien already is inside, and he has access to the data. And what you think, what you're thinking, or whatever your fears are and things like that, he will access those and use them on you if he chooses to. He'll either leave you with the idea that you're in the school of higher consciousness and the special chosen or whatever, or he'll scare the fire out of you and paralyze you and whatever. But these are the important thing from my point of view is, and I know I not only am a hypnotist, I'm a medical hypnotherapist and a hypnotic anesthesia therapist. I train and certify people who are coming into hypnotherapy, including professional people. My point is that, and I worked in a hypnotherapy clinic for 4 years, had nothing to do with UFOs whatsoever. The point is that when you're working with someone in hypnosis, hypnosis is a naturally occurring state. It is. And people go in hypnosis at least twice every day. And the alien, when he does what he does, is accessing you literally, and he is taking advantage of the individual. I mean, everybody's always wondering, you know, could anybody make me do something I didn't want to do? And the alien is literally doing that. He's causing you to fear. He's causing you to a false memory. Literally, the true false memory syndrome is, in fact, altered by the alien. Because people come back with all these views and ideas about, oh, I was here, I was there, or whatever, and there were six other or seven other people standing there looking, saying, that wasn't true at all. You were there, and your dead brother was not on the spacecraft. Sorry. Didn't work.
Yeah. What's this question here? Let me grab this one right quick so I don't forget it. Oh, this one. This is a pretty easy one here. This was, are scoop marks associated somehow with implants?
They could be. Yeah. They could be. I know people that have got scoop marks and never got an implant, and a lot of people that have scoop marks that never, ever had an implant. Please, my audience, please let me make this crystal clear to you. But I'm one of these guys that I just do not buy into the making people think stuff and scaring people, especially abductees and contactees, about information that's simply not true. Implants are extremely, extremely rare. I look at hundreds of X-rays, MRIs, CAT scans every year, and guess almost none of them have an implant in them from abductees. And the few who do, many of them aren't implants either. They're like the man that had the object in his bag. It was a triangular-shaped object with a dot in the middle. We call it the AOL or implant. And I told the cardiovascular surgeon and the brain surgeon both that it wasn't an implant. And when we pulled it out, had it examined, guess what? It wasn't. The bottom line is that you don't need to be afraid of stuff. And it just a scoop mark doesn't mean that you, in fact, have an implant. That's not as true. There are people that have nosebleeds from childhood. I had them a lot. Also had an implant at age 12, 1960. I was conscious during the video. I remember it consciously. But the point is that after that particular implant, there was no further ones. If those of you who are really interested in that sort of subject, just go to Operation Alien DNA or alienhunter.org or operationaliendna.com, and you can check I have two books there that are available. You're welcome to read them and check them out. But the point is that you don't need to be afraid of this stuff because the vast majority of people do not have implants, period.
Yeah, and see, I agree with that. I mean, I used to catch criticism for that early on in the field because I used to say the same thing. No, not everybody got damn implants. Because most of the contactees I met didn't have them. And I have two scoop marks from a foot medical. I was taking a picture of them today. They're old, from a long time ago. But I was taking a picture of them today to post on a web for a friend of mine. And the very first question he asked me, was there an implant? I said, not. As far as I know, I don't have any implants other than the damn stent the doctor gave me. That's the only implant that I actually know I got. Other than that, man, I don't think I got any implants. And I don't think I need for anything. They seem to keep tabs on me quite well without the damn thing. I gotta say though, I have found implants, but not like the V chips. And MILAB contactees, or MILABs, whatever you want to call them, but not in real alien contactees. I just don't see them often.
Well, my scoop mark I got when I was 4 years old. I still have it. It's a 5/8 inch across. The thing was huge on my little tiny skinny leg. But I never got an implant until I was age 12. So just because one has a scoop mark doesn't necessarily mean. What it does mean is that that scoop mark has been biologically taken like a biological punch. And, it's been a whole evening on this. The bottom line is that most of the cases that we've looked at where these were present, we actually had one of our abductees that drew the device that removes it, how it functioned, what it did. And she even described the bright flash of light that worked with it and the instrument itself. What's amazing is later we did a study on this medically and found that bright light probably was, very possibly was ultraviolet light, a very high intense light, and it cauterized the wound. And as a result, the scoop produces a solar elastosis, a condition that would only be produced only in that scoop by, something under extreme intense ultraviolet light.
Now you see, follow up. Yeah, it's cauterized, and that's the best way to describe it. Just follow it up with where the scoop marks come from. I hope you was listening to part of what he was just saying there, because it kind of partially explains it.
Yeah, Well, the two answers to that is number one, they can come. Number one, I've seen marks that were scoop-like that were not alien-related, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then I've seen, and I've got other cases that I'm telling you, you can see them. One guy's got seven of them in a row right up his leg. I mean, it's just unreal. And by the same token, in my opinion, one of the purposes, and the fact is they're gathering DNA from you. And that's just all there is to it.
Yeah.
Now, you can consider it a good or a bad thing. That's up to you. I consider it bad when somebody takes my DNA or my kid's DNA, period. I don't care who they are. But even if, whether it's good or whether it's bad, whatever your viewpoint is, the fact is that the scoop itself, in the first public surgeries we did, and we've done a number of them before 1995, but in the first public surgeries, literally the scoop, the skin itself, the biological containment around the implants was in fact the surface skin of the abductee himself. That's the reason the body didn't reject it, number one. And number two, the pathologist said that was impossible, and it couldn't have happened. He said because the surface skin, the keratin, is never found inside the body, deep inside. It just isn't. There's no such thing. It isn't going to happen and can't happen. And he said, well, we had 17 witnesses, an attorney, and two doctors. He said, I don't care how many you had there. It's impossible. It didn't happen. It can't happen.
Yeah, that's just doctors too. What can you say? Well, by the way, Farrah Yadoza says hi to you, Dal. I'm actually talking on Istanbul. I don't want to air with you. I love the internet, ladies and gentlemen.
She's talking about a coffee.
I just seen it pop on the screen while we were talking. And
who was this?
Anyway, we're going to move on. Farrah Yadoza.
Okay.
Turkey, yeah. And
oh,
she just said hi.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, but I had seen it pop up while we were talking. And, dude, I can't help it. I love the internet. It's a great place. Where else can you do all this and still be having other people talking to you while you're doing it? It's just a good thing to do. You know, but it's like the two I got on my left foot. The first time I seen them, I said, well, maybe I cut myself or, because I never remembered them. They were just there one morning. And there was one, and then there was another. And I thought, I'm busy. I do construction. It's easy for me to get hurt. You know, when I get stuff stuck in my arm, matter of fact, I had a doctor not too long ago with x-ray on my elbow. And they said, you got something in the back of your elbow. First thing that popped in my head, ladies and gentlemen, implant. You know what it was? It was a piece of pencil lead from back when I was in high school.
You have no idea how many of those we have that people don't know it's a pencil lead. And I tell them that, they almost get mad at me like I'm a conspiratist. You know, I'm trying to make them not have an implant. Hey, I can't make you have one or not. Whatever it is.
Yeah, and it's like I said, as far as I know, and... You know, I have my contacts a little more advanced than most because I've kind of, as a researcher, I've kind of learned to incorporate them into my life. But I just always need an implant on me. I mean, the Graves keep a good tab on me. They keep a telepathic link most of the time, or probably all the time. I just don't realize it. And they know where I'm at anytime they want me. They can monitor me. I just don't see why they would need it. I could understand, though, why the government might need them. But I got to be honest with y'all. If you own a cell phone, the government doesn't need an implant. That's frankly be honest.
They know where you're at.
Yeah, they know where you're at. Both my phone and my car have built-in GPS. It's not like I'm going to go hide from them, okay? And I think my new car, they can even turn it off with a flip of a switch or something. So, yeah, Big Brother is here, people. For another example, just the other day I was driving between Louisiana and Florida on interstate. It's only a 3.5-hour drive. Getting it off. 67 cameras. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I got to the point where I quit counting them now because we were riding around in Pensacola, Florida, like 105. It's CCTV around the planet now, guys. But a big Martian brother watching now because it's not just in America. They're watching everybody. Better get watching. Personally, I thought none of this stuff would have happened, too. Yeah, I just thought it would. But anyway, we're going to move on, get away from that. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, it is something you can't help me keep track of because a lot of cities, we are keeping track of the CCTV networks, but I'm going to tell you why. This paid off a big dividend in the Jerusalem case. Everybody kept telling me this case was real, Joe, it's real, I'm telling you, it's real. I said, whatever. I said, we only got these three guys, and they happen to have this weird triangulation, I'm not buying it. I said, this is the Temple Mount, ladies and gentlemen. Come on. If something ascended from the heavens to the Temple Mount, this would be of epic proportions in the Muslim and the Christian world. But yet, there doesn't seem to be any hoopla. So,
I got hold of Phil Jerner, who's a friend of mine, who works with the CCTV network. He got to a hold of a friend of his, and guess what we found? 27 cameras facing the Temple Mount, and guess what we saw on the 27 cameras? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. So obviously this was a staged hoax, obviously, because other cameras that was just sitting there, got anything, no flashes, no lights, and this was a big flash that came from this thing. These cameras should have been in day in light of blue color. Nope, sorry, didn't happen. So, guys, I just thought I'd mention it. But you see, Don, that's what Don and I are talking about. Shit you got to work with. And these were sophisticated hoaxes. You know, I mean, whoever did that was CGI. They did a good job on it. But, you know, and it's all the time. I just don't get the hoax thing. I get it, but I don't get it. I want to choke them when I do that. You know, it's just wasting our time. I ain't got that much time anyway, and I know Dow doesn't either, and I just don't know why you'd want to waste that time. Now, for you, I know, what time is it? We're getting a little closer to the end. Up and coming, what you up to? I want to make sure we get you in here in case we get off on another man somewhere. I know, wait, tell me more about the second book.
Okay, the first book is about physical evidence and how you can find your own evidence. You don't need me or anybody. You can find your own evidence, and that's the Alien Hunter and Light book on OperationAlienDNA.com or AlienHunter.org. Either one will get you there.
Yeah.
And the second book is on alien implants. Alien implants is the second book, and it goes into the detail. Of course, we show different types of implants there, ceramic, metallic, all kinds of stuff. And go into great detail in my own case about what happened and how that happened, and the screen that they tried to leave over me that didn't work. I mean, I figured that one out. I mean, if you've been fooled enough by these guys and you get it, it's like, not anymore. So you're always looking for the screen each time whenever you're in these events. So the third book we're doing a third one right now, and it's called Invisible Implants. And it goes into it's a pretty bizarre end of the spectrum. And the last book in that series, the fourth book I'm writing currently, is a book called, the working title is Rendition, and it goes into the alien hierarchy, who they are, what they're doing, and what transgenics is really all about on board that massive group of crafts they've got out there. In other words, what's the surprise?
Yeah, well, that one should be interesting. I don't think, I know I read the first one because I got a copy. I don't know if I got a copy of the second one. I'm going to have to look around and see. I don't, for some reason it's not ringing a bell, and I know I would have got it because I'm always interested in implants just to keep up on the research. Just so I can keep up on it. See, I've told this to people all the time. It's like we a proxy with knowing everybody in the field. It helps because we can cheat. You know, I don't have to, or the organization, but it doesn't have to harp on one thing. You and a couple other people I know are working on implants, so hey. If y'all do that, you know, why waste more energy on something somebody's already doing good research on? That's just crazy. And I think that's something the field could take a lesson from there. Another question for you. This is probably going to be an impossibility, but this is something that's been bouncing back and forth among several of my ufology friends, including myself. They've been talking about oversight for the field, like every other field has oversight.
Sure.
And, which I do agree is a good idea. I just don't know how you're going to pull it off with all the egos in the field without somebody
agree
somewhere
with you.
Getting mad.
Everybody's going to want to be top dog, and they're going to want their stuff to be the best, the tallest, the longest, and all other standards will be measured by them. But on one show, a guy asked me this, a therapist asked me, he says, let me answer your question by telling you what we do. When I finished, he wrote me a definitive statement that I'll be glad to see anybody wants to see it and who wrote it, as a therapist in Arizona. And he said, I think that is, he said, you basically, that's yourself bulletproof. And I said, yeah. And he says, everybody ought to be doing that. And I said, well, in my opinion, they should. But I said, everybody's got different methods, different things, different ideas, and I don't begrudge anybody. I'm not out here picking on anybody, and I don't want to pick on anybody. And I'd have no interest in everybody doing what Daryl does. Well, first of all, you can't do what Daryl does or what Joe does because you don't know everything that Joe knows or everything that I do. I mean, one lady called and said, well, I want to learn everything you do. And I said, have you got 40 years to do this in?
You think it's going to be like a weekend course or what?
I'm glad you said that.
Take a hypnosis course over the weekend, get the certification, and then walk into the office and see if you're going to get away with that. It's not going to happen. First of all, they're never going to let you in. Number two, you'll be sued if anything goes wrong. I'm a master level NLP. I've been a police officer. I've been a licensed private investigator. I handle federal cases. Got one right now that I'm going to federal court on in 2 weeks. I said, the point is, all these are investigative skills and things that I bring to the table. Not everybody's going to have that background, so they're going to use the background that they have. There are people that are therapists. I'm not a therapist. Oh, my goodness, you know. Well, you should be a therapist, too. Well, I'm sorry, I just don't have the time to go pick that up while I'm doing it. But we do have plenty of people who are therapists that work with us.
That's right.
We have plenty of MDs and hot shots all kinds of interesting people. We've got about 30 professional people that work with us. The point is that everybody's got different standards and different things, and it's just going to be nigh impossible for someone to pull that off, so to speak. And I think that even if that were an appropriate thing to do, doing that is going to be near impossible, and it's going to be the biggest dogfight that you ever saw, because everybody's going to want to be it done by their standards. And I'm telling you right now, if you're going to use our investigative or background stuff, you're going to have to know all that and have to be able to, you've got to be certified in the state of Texas to be a private investigator. You're going to have to be a former cop. You're going to have investigator. Nobody's going to go out and get that. You just can't go do that stuff. You can't. If you're not a therapist, you're not going to go down and get a therapy license over the next couple of months. So it's not even practical, in my opinion. But there are certain things we can all adhere to, and I think Joe and I and other Bud and others have followed, and we care about the client, the patient, whatever level of individual they are to your research. In our case, it's usually all of the above. But the point is that we care about them, we care about what happens to them, and it's not just the story we're after, and it's not just the evidence. There's much more to this thing. It affects all of humanity, as far as I'm concerned. So whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, I want to know the truth. And I don't like it when the alien decides they don't want me to know what that is. Now you got I used to be in the intelligence community on top of that. Now, the reason we kept secrets is because we didn't want you to know what we were doing, number one. And number two is, if you did know what we were doing, you would have the option or the ability to interfere with our intelligence operation. My point in saying that is the alien is no different. They don't want you to know what they're doing, and they're never going to tell you the truth. And if they did, you would be able to interfere with it. I mean, how many aliens you think are going to come and say, "Hey, Bill, guess what we've been doing to you all these years and all of your kids and all these other people"? Isn't that great? Do you think I might use it against them? I probably would.
If anybody needs it, use it against them, they do. But yeah. Just so much goes on, and so much to keep tabs on. It actually does make me a little crazy sometimes. Because I don't have the need to get even with them or anything like that. I don't get mad at them. I did when I was younger, but I gotta be honest now. The only time they really made me mad is like when I was in my 20s and they were taking my son, and he used to hack me off. Of course, they would just knock me out. It was a moot argument at the point. That's why, and they always noticed, maybe it's because you always noticed that they always made sure my hands were so I could see it. So, I don't know what that's about. But now, in all fairness, they don't have to worry about it. I'm not a threat in that aspect. I'm not going to reach out to them.
No, not at all.
I really want to know. Yeah, for me, it's more like an insider deal. I'm trying to find out what's going on from the inside. And they do let me retain some stuff, but then again, it comes down to, all right, let's say that I'm lucky and I'm retaining 50%, which is a lot, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not retaining that, by the way, but let's just say, for the sake of argument, I'm retaining 50%. Now, out of that 50%, how much of that is actually true? How much is I'm not making up, and how much are they not making up? Unfortunately, contactees have a tendency to dramatize, and I'm going to be polite about it, but they do. And ET also lies. So you have to add that into whatever you think is true. So then you have to stop and think, okay, well, wait,
I think this happened, but did this really happen? Because it's an implanted memory. Am I imagining this based on what was going on? It's a lot more involved than y'all think it is. It really is. It's really hard to get to the real truth.
Well, there's so lots of truth.
Yeah.
You bring up a really brilliant point there, and my question to the audience or to anyone asking the question, we need to have new standards or whatever, you just brought up two great points. Number one, what the alien said or did is one thing, and often is a different story when you find out the whole story about it. Number two is how much did the abductee actually know or think or say? All these different things that crop up. The investigators themselves should ask this big question. What is it that I have in my arsenal of techniques and skills and abilities that allow me to know both those questions clearly? Without a flaw, I'm going to find out what that is, regardless of what the abductee or the alien knows or whatever. And if you don't have those kind of tools in your arsenal, in my opinion, you might ought to think about finding out what it would take to do that. Because I'm not the guy that wants to wonder what happened. You know, you go to court and find out that your client was was innocent or guilty, and you didn't have a clue after the trial was over, and they were acquitted or convicted, and it was the wrong thing. We want to know the truth. It's just that simple.
Yeah, it is just that simple. We want to know the truth. It's going to always be an uphill fight. And like I said, we're going to always have to be decisive, you know, conflicting. As far as the thing, I really do know we need oversight. I understand that because part of the problem is there's so much garbage in the field that a lot of legitimate stuff is being suffocated. We made this point on a panel show we did the other night. While we were live, Darryl, I had to listen to the audience go and start searching like UFO and paranormal and abductions and see what they found. Mm-hmm. A lot of the good stuff isn't readily available. There are, don't get me wrong, there are a few that pop up. But in general, on the first 15 pages, there may be three legit sources of information. The rest are garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. So I don't know what we're going to do as a field. We've got to do something. We can't keep letting the garbage build up because the media seems to find the garbage always. You know, they always find the garbage. It's like contactees. I have seen a bunch of contactees on TV. Now, not to take away from them, because some of them are legit contactees, but the most of the ones I've seen on things like NBC, ABC, were not contactees. They may have thought they were. I don't even know why they thought they were, but they were definitely not contactees. But here's a credible news show portraying these people as contactees when they aren't. When, in fact, there are really good contactees with good education levels that are part of their community, that are working with their community, that have good jobs and good families and are just like any other American in the country. They don't want to use them. They don't even want to talk to them.
True. Very true.
You know, it's because that's credibility. They don't want to put somebody out there. And people like you and me, they just hate. Anybody who wants to bring credibility to this is just, but all in all, somebody must like us because we do both get away with a lot of crap. Because let's be honest, if they wanted us gone, it wouldn't be that hard to arrange an accident on the interstate somewhere. You know, or an 18-wheeler just fall on top of your car or something. So I know as many protractors as we got, there are friends of ours in the government that are kind of, you know, saying, okay, hey, leave these guys alone, leave those guys alone. Like, yeah, go harass them idiots over there. We should harass them and debunk your sunfire still. It is a lot of fun. But it is kind of scary too. And you know, being in the community yourself, I mean, being in the black ops community yourself, you know that they're good at keeping tabs on people, and they're good at knowing what's going on. So, and you know as well as I do, if they really want you going, they're going to make you go. There's nothing you can do or say that's going to happen.
You know, one of the things that I hate to use this term because it's going to sound awful, and I don't want anybody to take it personally because it's not directed at anybody in your audience, but I do know of some folks that this would fit perfectly that are, and I don't think they're listening, and certainly no one we've talked to. But in the intelligence community, when we wanted to, when we needed to give information that was inaccurate or was in a direction that we wanted it to be, even if it were true, would feed it to a person who had, let's say, a a very anxiety, anxious personality that wanted to get the quote-unquote truth out. And usually whenever you have these type of people, and usually this would be in a communist situation, like a Castro, Cuba, or something like it as an example, and you find a person like that in his organization, and then you feed them information. Now, how does that apply to the UFO community? If you're a UFO investigator and you magically seem to know the answers to everything, and miraculously, you've got these inside people telling you the big secrets. Well, let me give you a hint. I was in the intelligence community, and if I was sitting here telling you all the big secrets that I was signed off on and just told them anyway, my chances of going to prison are real good. I had a top secret clearance. Really? They didn't spend $250,000 in 1968 for nothing. And they made me sign my life on it. So if you're getting the inside scoop from your secret people all in the intelligence community, NSA or whatever, number one, it's either A, not true, or B, you've been set up and you're what we referred to as a useful idiot. We're feeding you exactly what we wanted you to say. And it's highly likely it's not even accurate. But as far as you're concerned, oh, it's real, all right. It's the real stuff. I've got the inside story. Well, welcome to the world of Black Ops, and you just fell for it.
Yeah, and ain't that the truth, it doesn't matter. I stay out of all of that as much as I can. I got a lot of friends in the government, got a lot of friends in the military, but even them, and some of these guys I've been friends with for 30, 35 years, and still, when they call me and say, hey, you know, Joe, I'm not using my name, but I was a boy shift the other day and this came across the desk and blah, 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 blah. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they can tell me that because I do have above top secret security clearance. In case y'all didn't know this, the FBI and Daryl Pike goes through the same thing. Every 4 years, they do a background check on me. Not so much because of the clearance, but to make sure I'm not breaching the clearance. When they say lifetime commitment, they're not freaking kidding y'all. They mean lifetime. And I found out about it by accident. I know I've told the story before, but I found out about it by accident. Right after Katrina, I was working for a guy in the FBI who does forensic government. He was retired. He's a forensic expert. He was retired. And I was remodeling his condo. Well, he had a background check on me before he let me into his apartment. He called some buddies at the FBI and here it was. So I walked into his house to sign the contract that morning. He called me the night before. He said, yeah, you got the contract. So I walked in his house to sign the contract. He said, Joe, I'm just curious. Why does the FBI do a background check on you every 4 years? I said, because in the Navy, I had a Class 9 above top secret security clearance. I said, but before you go asking anything, it was just because of what I did on board ship. Now, anytime somebody hears it, they automatically think I had some kind of covert crap going on. I was involved in some kind of weird. No, it's because of the equipment I physically had to work on board that ship. Matter of fact, most of it is still classified even today. And it cracks me up because most of it is outdated and useless now. It's still cracking it. But they do keep tabs on it like that.
That's true.
You know, they want you to know, hey, you know, we are watching, we are paying attention. And if you do cross it down, when I found this out, I even pushed the issue. I was doing an episode of Wake Up USA one afternoon, just a couple of weeks before I left them. And I started talking about a particular aircraft that I worked on. First off, this was wild. In the middle of the show, they just cut the show off halfway, and the next day I got a phone call and said, oh, your boy, it wasn't even encrypted or anything. The guy was just like, hey, I'm from this agency, and you're borderline breaking your oath. Tells me they pay a big attention to me than I realize. And frankly, guys, I don't know anything. Dad probably knows way more than I do as far as government secrets. I mean, I know about different equipment that we use, but I don't know any secrets, you know. I mean, nothing done. So, but it is funny when people see that, they instantly think, oh my God, he works for the government. Speaking of that, Dad, there's a rumor floating around right now that I'm in charge of the military abduction operations in the United States. The first time somebody told me, I said, really? Do you really believe that? And they're like, yeah.
That's really amazing. People will buy into it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really amazing.
Oh, yeah. They said some of ICAR's people and some of my personal friends are the top generals. I'm like, really? I said, these guys know what to duck yourself. Come on. And I get a real big kick out of it, but, you know, it's how stuff gets started. And I have had a couple of serious inquiries from listeners and friends. Is that true? Is it true? I'm like, no, it's, come on, y'all know me all my life. Come on, when do, let's just change this around. When do I have time to go out and do a military
Oh, you have all kinds of time. You have multiple lives, and you come from the future, and you've got 40 different lives out there, and you're multiple personalities with many lives. That's how it works.
See,
you just don't
I can see he. I see he's been dealing with the new agents. I mean, the peace level. Damn, I'm getting myself in trouble. I got to shut up. They'll be writing me, cussing me for weeks, man. Y'all know I love all y'all new agents. Don't take that the wrong way. I really do. I got lots of new age friends. They drive me crazy with this stuff, man. What I don't understand, I know we're getting close on time here, but what I don't understand, if all this Pleiadian stuff was true and all this PLL stuff was true, what happened? All right, I have to judge the aliens by their actions, just like I judge everybody else on this planet. I have to judge aliens the same way, by their actions. And their true actions are less than honorable. That's all I can say about it. If I'm going to judge them by what they have done, I don't think they're here to destroy us, but I don't think they're all loving, kissing on us either. We're part of their agenda. I gotta be honest with you, I don't even think we're the primary part. I think we're just part of the damn thing. That's what scares the living crap out of me, because I don't think it's hard to make the contactee understand this, but it's not all about the contactee. It is really about the aliens and what they're doing. We're just somehow or another got fucked into the program. So we want to make it about us, but in fact, that's not all that's going on here. Three races constantly picking people up on a regular basis. You know, the numbers seem to get bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And thanks to places like Facebook and Twitter and MySpace, the amount of people coming in as contactees for us has grown 100-fold. And if that's the way it is across ufology, then this is much, 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 much bigger than anybody realizes.
So
that kind of worries me, too. But anything we need to plug? Well, give them a website for sure so they know where to find you.
Sure, be glad to. The bottom line is, if you want to contact me or find out about our research, in fact, one of our last cases, we had one of our abductees actually his captor and cut it and with a sword, and I got the DNA.
Ow.
And amazing stuff. We're still working on that particular project. Sometime we'll come back and go over that if you want to. And other DNA
stuff we've
got. But the website is OperationAlienDNA.com or AlienHunter.org. Either one of them will get you to me, and you can ask your questions. I'd be glad to answer them, and I do answer all my own email. And I thank you so much for being on your program tonight, Joe. You've been outstanding.
I always love having you on. We blow through 2 hours like it's nothing. Really, we blow through 2 hours. Honestly, I didn't even know we were at the end of the show. I was looking down going, no way, where'd the last hour go? Damn. And the thing of it is because there's so much information going out between us, it's hard to, it's hard to stay confined to, easily 2 hours. I notice even when people like us are on coast, it's even hard to confine to the 4 hours. There's just too much information, and there's too much to talk about, and there's too much going on that, you just can't fill it. But yeah, I'm going to get you back. What I'm going to do is, like I said, we're running this contactee thing for the next 14, 15 weeks. We're going to have quite a next week, by the way, is Bridget Grant. Bridget Grant's going to be on. She's a contactee. She's actually the first D-negative mother. If y'all know what that means, if you don't, you will find out next week. It's part of the blood type research work we're doing right now. And look it up. You'll know what I'm talking about. D-negative. You'll find out what it is. It should be for an interesting show. But anyway... Dad, I want to tell you thanks for being on. You're always fantastic, man. We've already run over, but Kevin, we'll get you on in a minute. But I'm going to definitely get you back because, like I said, we're going to do two panels at the end of this. So you'll be on with the, six other contactees will be on, or five other contactees will be on with us. And we're going to do panels like that so that anybody who's missed anything or anything that wants to know anything can approach y'all just like that. That particular night, I'm going to probably just be sitting there listening. Unless, we got to get direction. I guess I'll be doing direction between everybody talking. Because there's going to be enough of y'all that it's going to take a little while to get out. We are actually, ladies and gentlemen, and I got to talk with the other guests about this. We are thinking about making the two panel shows 3 hours instead of 2 hours. Because there's going to be so much information that it's going to be hard to cram it all into 2 hours. But again, Dale, man, you're always a great guest. It's always good catching up with you. You know, it's been too long since I talked to you, because I missed a whole book somewhere in this. I'm trying to figure this one out. I keep up on you pretty close, so I'm kind of wondering how I missed this one book here. I'll get it. But thanks again for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, come see us next week. Keep a smile going. And, God, enjoy your lives a little bit. Have some fun. You know, raise some hell. Smack your children. I don't know. Smile. I'll see y'all next Wednesday. Good night, everybody.
I was flying through the stratosphere just the other day. I was on overnight leave from the Starfleet base. When all of a sudden something caught my eye. I felt a weird vibration and I saw a glow in the sky. So I checked the control board, but just my luck. All the space boat systems were jammed and locked.
That was on Monday. Ted Tweetmeyer is an engineer, former NASA program manager, and we examined solar flare data, and we searched for any connection, any correlation between the solar activity and the earthquake. You remember that. Tonight, we are going to talk with Ron Stewart, developer of the ORIE, ORI technology, and Dr. Joseph Resnick, who is a physicist and engineer and developer of a number of classified technologies for NASA and for the Department of Defense. And our focus tonight is to find what is the real situation on the ground in Japan, what's really going on now, and to ask what can be done. What are the problems there, and what can be done? We'll be back right after this.
Hello, welcome, and good evening once again out there in Internet Radio Land, and hello also to our 105.8 FM listeners all the way out in New Orleans, Louisiana, where our here is quite rainy. You've had some power blockages and things go out.